की जाए. So today we will speak on verses 17 to 19, and I pray for the blessings of the Vaishnavas to be able to say something that's a little useful, or at least not an impediment to your spiritual development. So I will just read the Sanskrit and the English of the first two verses, and then we'll chant the other verses. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritcha. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato jayo mudirayet nasta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavachutamashloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us offer our obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan, unto Narayan Nishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadev, the author. By regular attendance and classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is practically destroyed, and thus loving service to the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental song, is established as an irrevocable fact. So we know that in this chapter we're hearing about the Ganges, and the Ganges has descended and is being distributed over all different parts of the world and going into the salt water ocean. And we're hearing now how Lord Shiva offers prayers to the Lord, because the water descends on the head of Lord Shiva. Any other reminders of how that went? Did I do it right, or is there something more that I need to mention? Lord Shiva's offering prayers. Before him, others were offering prayers, I believe, but I can't remember. Do you want to refresh my memory, Madhu? Of course, we're a little scattered, huh? Yeah, I was also thinking, like just like these waters, the Ganges are scattered, all the nectar that we're getting in the Bhagavatam is scattered between, the topical class, and the first canto, and the fifth canto, and the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it's all a little hard to keep track of the whole thing. Anyway, here Lord Shiva is glorifying, offering beautiful prayers to the Lord. Shri Bhagavan, he's also called Bhagavan because he has, what is it? How much percentage of the opulences of the Lord? Oh, this is 94, what? Lord Shiva, do you remember? And I thought that was 78%, that's right, yeah, 78% is Lord Brahma, right? And then 80-something is Lord Shiva, and 90, maybe 84, 96% is Lord Narayan, something. And so many wonderful devotees, and has a super excellence, an unparalleled super excellence of beauty, and he's always surrounded by loving devotees, plays the flute, and what else? And he has wonderful pastimes. Om Namo Bhagavate Mahapurushaya Sarvaguna Sankhyaya Narayantaya Vyaktaya Nama Iti. The most powerful Lord Shiva says, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you in your expansion as Lord Sankarsana. Oh yeah, that's right. The expansion, the four expansions of the Lord, and he offers his to Lord Sankarsana. You are the reservoir of all transcendental qualities. Although you are unlimited, you remain unmanifest to the non-devotees. Yeah. Everywhere but Water, water. Do you know that? Remember that the ode of the ancient mariner. Water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink. So it's like that for us. The Lord is everywhere, but we can't see Him even for a moment, unless we're very blessed, which we're trying to be right now. And then the next one is Bhaje Bhajan Yarana Pada Pankajam Pagashakritsnasya Paramparayanam Bhakteshalam Bhakpita Bhuta Bhavanam Bhavopaham Tva Bhavapavam Ishvaram. That's what you call alliteration. All the Bhav and Ams. Oh my Lord, you are the only worshipable person, for you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all opulences. Your secure lotus feet are the only source of protection for all your devotees, whom you satisfy by manifesting yourself in various forms. Oh my Lord, you deliver your devotees from the clutches of material existence. Non-devotees, however, remain entangled in material existence by your will. Kindly accept me as your eternal servant. Well, it's not only by His will, it's by their will. Not that you can say, you know, the Lord is partial. He says He's not partial. Here we go. Na me dvesho stina priyaha. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. But one who renders service unto me, is a friend is in me, and I'm also a friend to him. Okay, 17:19. Naya shimaya guna chitta vritti bhir nirikshito yanvapi drishtir ajyate isheyata no jita manyuranghasam kastam namanyeta jigishuratmana Naya shimaya guna chitta vritti bhir nirikshato yan vapi drishtir rajyate ishiyata no jita manyuranghasam kastam na manyeta jigishuratmana. Na, never. Yasya, whose. Maya, of the illusory energy. Guna, in the qualities. Chitta, of the heart. Vrittipi, by the activities, thinking, feeling, and willing. Nirikshata, of him who is glancing. He, certainly. Anu, slightly. Api, even. Drishti, vision. Ajite, is affected. Ishe, for the purpose of regulating. Vita, as. Na, of us. Ajita, who have not conquered. Manyu, of anger. Ranghasam, the force. Ka, who. Tam, unto him, the Supreme Lord. Na, not. Manyeta, would worship. Jigishu, aspiring to conquer. Atmana, the senses. Lord Shiva is saying, we cannot control the forces of our anger. Therefore, when we look at material things, we cannot avoid feeling attraction or repulsion for them. But the Supreme Lord is never affected in this way. Although he glances over the material world for the purpose of creating, maintaining, and destroying it, he is not affected even to the slightest degree. Therefore, one who desires to conquer the force of the senses must take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Then he will be victorious. So we repeat. We cannot control the force of our anger. Therefore, when we look at material things, we cannot avoid feeling attraction or repulsion for them. But the Supreme Lord is never affected in this way. Although he glances over the material world for the purpose of creating, maintaining, and destroying it, he is not affected, even to the slightest degree. Therefore, one who desires to conquer the force of the senses must take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Then he will be victorious. So in a nutshell, what did Lord Shiva say to the Lord now, without looking? Yes. No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, you can't. I'm not saying no, but I'm saying no, you can't be victorious. And what about the rest of us? What are the person? Thank you. Yes. Yes. And then we'll not be affected. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always equipped with inconceivable potencies. Although creation takes place by His glancing over the material energy, He is not affected by the modes of material nature. Because of his eternally transcendental position, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in this material world, the modes of material nature cannot affect him. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is called transcendence, and anyone who wants to be secure from the influence of the modes of material nature must take shelter of him. Om Agyana Chimirandhasya Gyananjana Salakaya Shakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest of ignorance, and my spiritual master is forcing open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him. Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Viprasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavane Pyo Vaishnave Pyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vashadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I am just looking at three main points that I was able to extract when I was reading this section, and especially this verse in purport, the last one. The Lord's transcendental nature and his transcendental potencies, and the means to benefit from knowledge of the Lord and his inconceivable potencies. So there's an argument, right, that goes on in philosophical circles when going on. I mean, for us, even when we were growing up, if someone starts arguing about God, who taught God, in modern terms you say, dude, we're talking about God. Even we were simple, right? But it goes on. I mean, not necessarily very intelligent. Simplicity and intelligence are not necessarily disconnected, but in some cases they are. But for me, it was obvious. If you talk about God, there's no question of his being affected. But in philosophical and scholarly circles, the question arises that if God creates, he has to be altered in the process of creation, because what we experience, if anyone in this world creates something, they have to expend a certain amount of energy, and that means they undergo change. So what is the answer to this, that God is involved, he must be affected and involved in the creation? What is the answer that is given in this purport? Does anybody remember? You can even look if you have a book. Yes. Right, and why not? What is it that he possesses? Yes. And what does he possess that keeps him from being affected? Go ahead, look in the book. You got it right there. Huh? So what does he possess that protects him from being affected by his glancing over the material energy? Yeah, no, not position. Almost pull. Pull. The Lord, is equipped with transcendental, inconceivable potencies, yes. So it's the Lord's potencies that act, not the Lord himself. So then, yeah, the Supreme Personality of God is always equipped with inconceivable potencies. So what argument can then be brought up? Well, there's another. Of course, this is what people do, right? They argue. This is actually done very nicely in the Vedanta Sutra. There's a thesis, an antithesis, and then objections and answers. Yes. Yeah, that's true. There's the Lord and his potencies are non-different, but also they're different. They're inconceivable. Well, but one might easily say that, well, they're his energies, so he's the one that's doing everything. And therefore, he's to blame. Sri Gopinath ki jai. Paramatma Devi Subhadra Maharani ki jai. Sri Sri Goni jai ki jai. So these are how the arguments develop. And Prabhupada says, in the purport to Bhagavatam 4.11.18, he says, it is incorrect to argue that because energy issues from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is the actor. The Supreme Lord is completely aloof from the action and reaction of this material world. And then, how is everything being done? The word inconceivable has been used. It is not within the power of one's small brain to comprehend. Unless one accepts the inconceivable power and energy of the Lord, one cannot make any progress. The forces which act are certainly set up by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he is always aloof from them, from their action and reaction. So in other places we hear that the material creation particularly is set into motion, not because the Lord... It is the Lord's Leela, but it's the Lord's Leela in response to the individual will of his other potencies, which are us, the Jiva souls. We have the opportunity to enjoy or to try to enjoy independently from the Lord. So in that sense, out of his Leela is his compassion. One devotee was doing her thesis, I think, remember Nanga Gopika, right? On the question of suffering and evil. It's a huge topic. And she was looking at it from our Gaudiya Vaishnava perspective. And one of the scholars that she had to reference, because you have to reference scholars in this regard, was saying, it's lucky that that the God of the Gaudiyas is compassionate, and that he takes pleasure in delivering the his souls on the material world. And indeed, that is the Leela of the material world. I also discussed this with your brother, Radhika Mahaprabhu, because when we think, the Lord created this material world as part of his Leela, as part of his enjoyment, we think, thanks a lot, right? You create this world, and we suffer, and this is part of your Leela. And we're like, so it's hard to wrap your head around that. So Radhika Raman reminded me that the Lord's idea of enjoyment and our idea of enjoyment is different. We might accuse the Lord of taking pleasure in our suffering, but that's not how it works. It's not like that at all. The Leela of the Lord is that he gives us the opportunity, like a loving father. His kids want to do things, and the father knows that if they do this, they're going to suffer. But what can be done? They want to do it, and they insist on it. And so he arranges the material world in such a way that actually we could come here and fulfill our desires for enjoyment without getting very badly burnt. But on the other hand, our insistence on misusing our free will is quite strong. So it's not the Lord's fault that we don't follow the rules that the material nature is made of. Of course, there's this persistent, envious voice that says, why doesn't he just leave us alone and let us enjoy independently from him forever? Why do I have to surrender to you? But this is all the conditioning of the material energy. Because once we misuse our free will and get entangled in the influence of the lower modes of material nature, then this kind of unreasonable train of thought implicates us more and more in the modes of material nature. We should also remember that there is no superior enjoyment to participating in the Lord's enjoyment, because he really knows how to enjoy. And his enjoyment is not restricted to himself. His enjoyment is infused in all those who are just willing to take part. So it's important for us, although the question of the Lord's potencies and his being not affected by the material energy may seem very preliminary and unnecessary for those who have a simple faith in God, it does open the door for further discussions about the Lord's potencies and why bad things happen to good people and so-called good things happen to so-called bad people. It gives us an opportunity to examine who the Lord is from many different angles, and also our relationship with him. It gives us a chance to further develop our relationship with him. Otherwise, we remain simplistic and not very deep. So although philosophy may sometimes seem like an unnecessary headache, if we get it from the right source, then it opens up our heart, it opens up our intellect to the inconceivable potencies of the Lord. And Srila Jiva Goswami says that unless we accept the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as inconceivable, beyond the conception of our words and mind, we cannot understand the Supreme Lord. Isn't that a contradiction? An apparent contradiction. We can't understand God unless we accept that we can't understand God. We can't even begin to understand God unless we accept that we can't understand God. And it's not so much, but even if we try to understand, Krishna promises us in the Bhagavad Gita, if he says, one who understands the transcendental nature of the Lord's appearance and activities, he attains to the abode of the Lord. And Prabhupada, I remember one lecture, he said, no one can understand, but even if you just try to understand, Krishna is so pleased. So unless we accept Achintya in the Supreme, we cannot accommodate the conception of God. Otherwise, he's just one of us, right? There's a movie out there like that. There was a series, right? What if God was one of us? Did you see that? When I visit my family, I get to see these things. My brother said, you like this, because this girl's name is Joan, and my name was Joan before, and he has this idea of me. So the song goes, what if God was one of us, just a slob like one of us? But of course, in the movie, God is not a slob. He's a person that keeps appearing to people and trying to convince them in different ways. It's a little mundane, but it does indicate the idea that God can appear in any way that he desires. So God appears to her in so many different ways, and she figures out it's God really fast because he or she, as God appears, is reminding her of the previous instruction that he gave to help her along. Of course, it's very centered on her dilemma, not enough on the glories of God. But the idea is that God, if we don't accept that God can be or do anything, then we can't even begin to understand that there is a God. Those who doubt that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can come as a human being and turn himself into a human child are fools who think that Krishna's body is material, that he is born, and that he therefore also dies. So this idea that God has inconceivable potencies is not an escape. Sometimes the Mayavadis, they accuse the devotees that they try to hide their ignorance by saying that God has inconceivable potencies. But how do they hide their ignorance? Do you remember? They say anarvachaniyam, right? They say, oh, the potency of Maya is, everything to them is unspeakable, right? You can't speak about God, you can't speak about Maya, you can't speak about anything. So why are they doing so much speaking, right? So they accuse the devotees in different ways, but when you accuse somebody, as you know, you actually expose yourself, right? So similarly, that the Mayavadis do like that. And so as I mentioned previously, if we're a little materially exhausted, or if we have even a small amount of bhakti sukriti, some pious results arriving from even some unknown performance of bhakti, we won't engage in this endless argument on transcendental topics challenging the existence of God. But instead, we'll open our mind and our heart and apply ourselves to the simple bhakti processes, which afford so much opulence for the devotee. In this regard, Prabhupada says, the path of acceptance is called avaroha panta. The word avaroha is related to the word avatar. Nice, huh? Which means that which descends. The materialist wants to understand everything by the aroha panta, by argument and reason, but transcendental matters cannot be understood in this way. Rather, one must follow the avaroha panta, the process of descending knowledge. Therefore, one must accept the parampara system, and the best parampara is that which extends from Krishna, evam parampara praptam. What Krishna says we should accept, imam raja shayovidu. That is called the avaroha panta. This is in chapter 10, text 13. Canto 10, text 13. Chapter 13, text 57. So these were the kind of verses that Prabhupada was commenting on just before he... I don't know if you've noticed, but maybe because we saw it on the video of Prabhupada's last days, how there's so much potency in that last part of the Bhagavatam that Prabhupada translated. He comes up with these statements that are so sublime. And this is one of them. I don't remember ever reading that the avaropanta, that word is related to avatar. It's like, and then I looked at the Canto 10, chapter 13, text 57. So when we do accept this avaroha panta, then we become qualified to directly experience the powerful effects of bhakti, which have been listed in the Nectar of Devotion. Who remembers some of them? Our Bhakti Shastri students just did that recently. Yeah. Which means? Yeah, in a more simple way, in the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada said, brings immediate relief from all material distress. Klesha Agni, burns up. Agni means to burn up, misery, right? They say this is the top two leaves, right, of the unfolding of bhakti. And then pure devotional service, what else? Yes, is the beginning of all auspiciousness. Is very rarely attained. Yes, how many people in the world you know are willing to even practice bhakti? I mean, you can find traces of it, but to make that the focus of one's life is in Brussels Center, we get people coming, but not so many of them come back. Of course, we take some responsibility for that, but then we also meditate on how rare it is to really pick up on how precious bhakti is, how rare. And what else? Remembers? Another one? There are six. What does Bhakti put one? Yes? Yes, it even... Yes, it derides... those in pure devotional service deride even the concept of liberation. And that is because... What does it give one automatically? Yeah, pure transcendental pleasure. And what is the most amazing thing about pure devotional service? Yes. Pure devotional service is the only means to attract Krishna. Prabhupada says Krishna is all attractive, but pure devotional service attracts even him. This means that pure devotional service is even transcendentally stronger than Krishna himself, because it is, was a personification. Srimati Radharani, Krishna's internal potency. My little brother, when we talk about God and I say he goes, or she, and I go, or she. So what if one says, well, that's pure devotional service, but my devotional service is not very pure, so what would you say to that? You would say what? Yeah, so someone says, well, that's pure devotional service, but my devotional service is not very pure. So what would you say? So would you say that you've experienced some of these effects of pure devotional service already? Yeah. I mean, I'm sure all of us have had this incredible experience of how chanting Hare Krishna and being with devotees just ended all of our suffering. Okay, we may have some minor suffering that we have to go through because we still have some contamination that needs to be purified, but I mean, major things, major sinful activities that cause so much suffering fall away, right? All those illicit activities, which are the pillars of sin. We have clarity, why we're here, where we come from, where we can go, where we have the opportunity to go. This is all auspicious. We become very, very convinced that we found the goal of our lives. And that automatic, Prabhupada says that people suffer because they don't have a goal in life. Or because, he says, another place he says, because of having a vacant heart. Oh, that sounds so terrifying. A vacant, empty heart. Vacant. I mean, that's, for me, that's like terrifying. Vacant heart. He says a society of thieves can never be happy. So unless one is aware of Krishna and is trying to give one's energy that our Krishna is back to him, one automatically has to be a thief and suffer and have no goal in life. I think I probably mentioned this before, but it was very striking in the Thomas Merton's book, Seven-Storied Mountain. He talked about his mother was an atheist and his father was a closet Christian. But he said when his mother died and then his grandmother died and then his grandfather died, he said there was nothing to do but suffer just like an animal. Everybody was miserable because they didn't know how to turn to God. And later on he became quite advanced. He became a monk, a Trappist monk. And he took a lot of pleasure in performing devotional tapasya in his tradition. In the Bhakti Shastri class, we were discussing this recently, because now I'm facilitating the first 9 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita with the first-year students who haven't taken the Bhakti Shastri course, and that's where I got to miss Gopal Hari's class yesterday, but we have it online. It's online, right, Madhu? Did you put it online yesterday? Okay, great. In Bhakti Shastri class, we were discussing this, why Krishna consciousness is the supreme religious activity. So from what we've, the supreme religious practice, so from what we've discussed so far, why would we say that Krishna consciousness is the supreme religious practice? And what? The objective is to please Krishna. Yeah, for Krishna's sake. Not for any goal except to please Krishna, right? Because there's, in all religions, there's the idea to please God, but there's the hope with reward. But the goal of practicing Krishna consciousness is to please Krishna, just to please Krishna. Mm-hmm. They have some, but it's quite limited, right? I remember when I was in a religion class, I was told catechism, Catholic, he told me that I was made for God's enjoyment. And I thought, well, that's nice, but it was weird because I never couldn't see this person who was enjoying me. And it felt like, you know, you're being like Big Brother's watching you or something. Not really that bad. My mind wasn't that developed, but I would like to know something about this person that I can't see who's enjoying me because it's weird, isn't it? But our catechism teacher was very stern, so I didn't dare ask her the question. But I found out the answer when I got Nectar of Devotion and explains about rasa and all of that. And that's how God enjoys. And that's how I get to be part of it, et cetera, et cetera. And then finally I didn't even remember the question until I read, you know, the doubt, until I read the Nectar of Devotion. But based on what we're saying today, by performing pure devotional service, one gets relief from suffering, one gets transcendental happiness, one is everything becomes auspicious. So what makes the religious Krishna consciousness, the supreme religious practice, is that we get what's called a higher taste, right? The param drishtva. And that's what Prabhupada makes in this purport, that by taking shelter of the Lord's, today's purport, transcendental lotus feet, we become secure and protected. Not just because someone's being our bodyguard, but because someone's protecting our understanding and our realization that we're not the body and that the supreme pleasure is in connecting on a spiritual level with the Lord in loving service. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is called transcendence, and anyone who wants to be secure from the influence of the modes of material nature must take shelter of him. So thank you for listening patiently. If anyone would like to make a comment or a question, I mentioned, I was talking about how the Lord is transcendental because of his transcendental potencies and how we gain unlimitedly by being aware and discussing the Lord's, being aware of and discussing the Lord's transcendental position and his inconceivable potencies. Even though they're inconceivable, they're fun to talk about. Any thoughts or questions, comments? Corrections. Yes, Rami Prabhu. Yeah, Lord Shiva was saying. Well, you have to keep in mind it's Lord Shiva speaking here, huh? And I guess I don't really believe that Lord Shiva can't control his anger, although sometimes there seems like he can't, right? Remember Bhrigu Muni? Yeah, Bhrigu Muni is his brother, and when he went to see, he was testing to see who was the supreme deity. Vishnu, the sages asked him to do it, so there's this whole discussion going on, who's the supreme deity, Vishnu, Shiva, or Brahma? So Bhrigu Muni was elected to go and check it out. He was brave. So first of all, he went to see Lord Brahma, who was his father, and he just didn't bow down or offer any respect. And Lord Brahma was very angry, but because he has Prabhupada, either Prabhupada or the text itself says that his anger was like fire, but his intelligence was like water to put out his anger. But of course, Bhrigu Muni, being a sage with great insight, he noticed that, hey, my dad's really angry at me now. So I don't think he's the supreme deity. And then he went to Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva is his brother. And Lord Shiva wanted naturally to embrace his brother. He goes, don't come near me. You're so dirty, and I don't want you to touch me. I'm a Brahmin. And Lord Shiva was so angry, he was willing to kill him. I think it was only Parvati that saved his life, right? Didn't Parvati, like, somehow or other beg Was that what happened? I think it was Parvati that stopped Lord Shiva from killing his own brother. So it sounds like Lord Shiva is remembering these things. Of course, it's all part of Lila, but in his humble way, he's identifying himself as one who cannot control his anger. And let's face it, it's easy to control our anger to a large extent when we're living with saintly persons, and even then we don't always do so well. But what Radhanath Maharaj repeats, is that our real advancement is indicated by how we respond when we're provoked. So we can say, well, yeah, we do control our anger, but another devotee, he was giving the example. He said he's a nice devotee. He's situated in the Grihastha ashram. He said, I'm like a snake in a sandalwood tree. So if a snake is in a sandalwood tree, it's nice and cool, and the snake gets peaceful and kind of sluggish. He said, just don't take me out of my sandalwood tree too quick, okay? So in that sense, we're always subject to this anger and lust and envy, and Lord Shiva is mentioning that because we, as tiny souls, or as not God, although Lord Shiva is a particular tattva that's very close, he's taking a very humble position and representing us, that we are subject to anger. We're trying to control our senses and our mind, but it's scary how it can get out of hand so sometimes, right? And we need to be afraid. Prabhupada said we're not enough afraid. Does that answer a little bit, Remy? You're not very satisfied. What is some of your doubt? You can say it, because I'm sure some of us... Yes, Maharaj. Yes. Yes, like Lord Shiva had his experience. He got angry at his brother, and then when Cupid tried to attack him, he burned him to ashes. So, and he to destroy the universe, he has to get pretty angry. So he does his job. He does it quite well, but he probably doesn't feel that great about it when he thinks about how beautiful Krishna is. But he mentions that being subject to dualities, the aversion part brings the anger. Yes, Mark? Right. Yes. Then we're secure. So that's our main drive, is to try to develop this art of always taking shelter of the Lord in every circumstance. Yes? Remy, we'll get back to you, okay? Or you still want to continue this line of thought? Okay, let's see what maybe Janmashtami has a contribution to make. There's nothing we can do, you said? If we understand it. Yeah, the one thing that we have one thing that we can do, and that is to desire properly. And by desiring properly and taking shelter of those who desire properly, then we have hope of getting properly lined up with the Lord, who will guide our activities as a Rishikesh. Yes, Remy? Ultimately, Krishna is the supreme controller, and he empowers us to be able to control according to our level of development. But how much we're willing to line ourselves up with him, then we get that power to be able to control, but it's his power. Yes, Carlos? Yes? Yes. Yes, by Govinda gives pleasure to the senses, especially to those persons who are anxious to give pleasure to Krishna. When you love somebody, there's no question of not wanting to give pleasure, right? And the pleasure is always reciprocal. And that's the wonderful. And if you experience that with Krishna, then you experience it to the supreme degree. Yes, Gopal Harifu. Mm. Of what? Then you can feel safe, right? Because he's not going to. In the material world, it's those of us, we become involved with each other. And if someone that we're involved with is very subject to anger a lot of the time, it's frightening. And we'll just speak if we ourselves are. I remember one time I was really having a hard time, and I wasn't being very nice because I was very disturbed in mind. And I was apologizing to one devotee. She said, I have to deal with you sometimes, but you have to deal with yourself always. And so she said, I feel sorry for you being stuck with all that heavy energy. And she was very sobering when she told me that. But it's true. Being consumed by anger is a very bad place to be. There it, is, it says in the Bhagavatam, right? Bhagavad Gita is one of the gates leading to hell. I had a dream like that one time that I was like so angry. Terrible. I was so angry that I was beating up a devotee. And then in my dream, I woke up, but I was still sleeping. I didn't, you know, and I said to somebody, I said, was it a dream or did I actually beat up this devotee? And she said, no, Jai Bhadri, it wasn't a dream. You actually beat up that devotee. And I really felt like, I don't think I could have ever felt worse in my life. I was so relieved when I woke up. I mean, even I wasn't that angry with that devotee, but in the dream I was. So this anger is a very, very, like you said, it's something that we want to be free from. Only sometimes we can be angry if someone tries to hurt a devotee. And then that's allowed. And even then it has to be dealt with in a very controlled way. Because everybody's part and parcel of Krishna, right? Whether even if they're, so it's quite a deep topic, how to be free from anger. Thank you for bringing that up, how important that is, putting emphasis on that. I didn't pay enough attention to that. Thank you. Yes, Mark. Oh, Michael. Because, let's see, can you read it again, what he says? He says, because we are subject to anger, therefore, yeah. Would someone like to comment on that? Yes. Dhaneshwar Prabhu, yeah. To me, it sounds like a cycle. Like I don't know if like it's one is necessarily. It's something that's a cycle. You understand? Lord Shiva is saying it in a particular sequence here, and maybe if we studied it more deeply, we could understand it in more detail. But when I was reading, I was thinking it's a cycle. This being when we want to be the enjoyer, then we get implicated in this cycle of being frustrated and then thinking, well, I didn't get what I wanted now, so then maybe I can get it over there. But I'm not going to get it over there. And then different thoughts went through my mind. But I don't know if it's exactly a linear thing, although it sounds like it in this prayer. I noticed that too. That I was a little bit, in my mind, I just thought, okay, it's a cycle, and it's not that it has, it kind of doesn't have a beginning and an end. The only end is if you get out of it, right? You transcend it. Right, what comes first, the egg or the chicken, right? Yeah. Okay, I feel that devotees are getting a little bit, and I'm a little bit over time. Thank you so much. Forgive me if I offended anyone inadvertently. And Hare Krishna.